Yeah, we're gearing up, and I'm super excited for the home preseason opener. Obviously, not to be mistaken by the Monday night. Yes, Monday night game versus the Bucks, right? The home opener, week two.
Yeah, Monday night.
It's Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night.
I was about to say, the way that you looked at me at first, I was like, damn, I messed up, didn't I? Not to be mistaken with that. Actual
I keep forgetting that it's a Monday night game. Opener. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to kick off your home opener.
Mm-hmm. That'll be fun. I mean, you can't knock it because your home opener last year was against the Bears. Mm-hmm. And that was Sunday night, wasn't it? So, yeah, man, this feels good. Prime time Texans,
that
baby.
I guess that was the home opener.
Yeah,
Texans, baby. You love to see it. But before you get there, you've got this preseason game. You've got next week's preseason game against the Lions. And then you've also got the joint practice versus the Lions. Mm-hmm. Those are really the three game-like opportunities that you have in order to see how confident you are in this offensive line and be ready for it. And honestly, I'm still wondering, I mean, about the preseason games themselves, because you imagine that one of those is where you get your starters out there. But you look down, you know, kind of the news wire of sorts of various teams and how they're handling the second preseason game, which is obviously tomorrow or tonight, depending on what team you're talking about. And there's more of them that are getting out here that are saying they're not going to start their starters in this game. I know that Todd Bowles said that Baker Mayfield won't play in this game. I know that there's been other teams that are like, actually, you know what? We're not running our starters out this week. I don't know if that means that they'll go back to week three being kind of a dress rehearsal of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But are we actually going to even see this offensive line in full, at least the starters out there? And what is that also going to mean for the opportunity to get this offensive line right, especially or to find the level of confidence that you want going into week one?
Yeah, you know, what do you have to see? Okay, so first on that, I feel as if the first team offense and defense will play one series on Saturday. I can't guarantee that, though, based on what you just talked about and what's going on around the NFL. It's a different world in the preseason now with the joint practices. They got a lot out of yesterday.
Cardinals not playing their starters Sunday. And now, if we compare that, the Broncos, I think they're a little bit more established as a team. The Cardinals, I'm going to be honest, that's one of my blind spots. I need to actually tap in with what the Cardinals have been doing. It's not the most important thing to see as they're in the they're on the other side, the NFC. But no, there's a number of teams that it feels like also still have a little bit of developing that also still aren't playing starters.
But I think we're going to see CJ Stroud and the ones and of course the defenses. The starting unit, presumed starting unit there, one series. And especially on the offensive side, new offense, they had the joint practices practice, but they haven't really gone out in a game situation. Also, Nick Caley's going to be calling plays from the sideline. I feel like they want to get at least one good look with the starting offense, one series. Now, if the series is a three and out, maybe two, but one series in essence, all right?
Yeah.
I think the offensive line might go two or more. They might go two series or more because they have to. You know, they have to be able to find some semblance of, you know, the thing that D'Amico's talked about. Like, once we get our five, we're gonna move forward with these guys. You know, getting to know each other a little better, getting used to playing. Together, etc. So,
and we're blowing through the stop signs on when we thought we would have a good idea of this.
Yes,
now, of course, that's been complicated by the Cam Robinson injury, Talking to Nick Caley, Nick Caserio, Payne Pendergast, that was a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it seem like by the end of this week that we would kind of be in that place. And I don't know. Are we in that place?
Mm-hmm. I don't think we are. And that's why I think they're going to play tomorrow. Defense, a little dicier. You can get away with sitting your guys. Clearly some guys are going to sit, you know, maybe have a little bit of a nick or something. But I think we're going to see the starters one series. I can't guarantee that because the league and the preseason is just different now.
All right, that out of the way, right? Whenever we do have an opportunity to see them, what are you needing to see to get you some level of comfortable? I don't think anybody's going to be 100% comfortable going into week one. And I don't know that you should. We've talked about it a number of times, but just to reiterate, there's a lot of moving pieces that you established from the outset of the offseason that you have to get figured out, starting with hiring a first-time play caller as your offensive coordinator and moving Cole Popovich up, not kind of changing the talent level of this offensive line to a higher degree that some of us were clamoring for. Like, I think you have a number of rookies that you're anticipating being big-time playmakers. Mm-hmm. All of those things include different learning curves that make it so that being fully polished in week one, in addition to the normal things that make it difficult to being fully polished in week one, I think that all of those things are in play. But maximum confidence level, what gets you to that place?
I think
what
three things. I think three things are going to help me feel better. As you mentioned, nobody's going to feel great going in because it's just going to be impossible given the ups and downs and the amount of time left. Like you said, there's only three more opportunities for two in terms of game type situations. Game tomorrow, joint practice, and maybe a good practice on Tuesday because they're going to have a walkthrough on Monday where they can evaluate.
You can't even take that last preseason
game. The last preseason game's out the window. That's going to be back very, very, very back of the roster playing for another team.
Probably, you could see a man rush east a whole bunch.
Rush east. Well, I don't know. We'll see. That'll be actually a tell. But three things tomorrow that I'm looking for that I think will make me feel a little better. Number one.
Ding.
Yes. Number one, ding, is the, where is it? Anyway, the run game.
Oh, I forgot we had the bell.
Yeah, the run game. I've said it multiple times. I don't think this is going to be necessarily an explosive offense. The run game may not, you might not see a bunch of 20-yard, 25-yard runs, but just no negative plays. It derailed so many drives last year. You know, you run on first down, you lose 3 yards. You run on second down, you lose three more yards. You're facing third and 16. You know, how many times have we seen that? Just some positive gains, no negative yards in the run game. That's number one for me, you know, with this. Number two, I want to see a pocket. Because so far, C.J. Stroud, when he's had success, you know, when the first team offense has had success passing the ball, it's been boom, boom, throw. You know, that first read, get it open. I want to see a good drop back, build a pocket, protect C.J. Stroud, maybe throw the ball a little deeper. Can these? We haven't really seen them. You know, we've seen them have success protecting C.J. Stroud, but oftentimes it's been like short routes, short dropbacks.
Yeah, that's true. And to be fair, it does feel like that's kind of what some of this offense is geared up to, at least what we can consider the more vanilla versions of this offense that you're going to get at this time of year. There's been an uptick significantly compared to last year and previous years in their quick game, which, hey, sign me up.
I don't mind.
Like, quick game is good for, you know, obviously helping your offensive line, but then also, you know, helping your run game. Again, we always invoke the Patriots, maybe more than what I imagine some people want to hear. But one of the things I always turn to the Patriots to about, and I'm always very, very fascinated by, is how they completely just, we are going to make up for not having a run game at points with just quick passing. And so if you're able to do that, you know, significantly well, you might be able to mitigate whatever, you know, run issues that you have. But I'm with you, right? I want to see push, like not just run game. I want to see the offensive line generate push to where yards before contact. We're seeing that as an uptrend. But then, yeah, the actual, you know,
can protection. They protect C.J. Stroud? Obvious passing situation. You've got to push the ball downfield.
Pin your ears back type situation.
I want to see that.
Okay.
I want to see that. Now, the A32 brought it up for an entirely different reason. I'm not worried about this, but I know some people are. I want to see a long pass or at least an attempt, he says or she says, to put my mind at ease that CJ is completely healthy.
Look at you.
What's that?
Considering that all the different people that could be texting.
Hey,
that's
women
nice.
Love us, man. And
they love half of us.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Actually, two-thirds. I didn't mean to do that.
So, but, you know, there has been out there early in the season. Hey, man, he's been a little bit off target, et cetera. I mean, early in the preseason and camp. He's been better of late, but I get that. I get that. You want to see that accuracy, especially on the long ball, is still there. The third thing for me, it's going to be hard to emulate, other than maybe the joint practice against the Lions.
Sure.
Red zone. Now, you know, the red zone is going to be, it's a battle of wheels up front. You're going to be facing a really good, a good front tomorrow, a really good front against the Lions. And how's your red zone success going to be? And who are your targets? You know, what's it going to look like?
No, for sure. Obviously, we know Nico is going to be involved there. And it seems like that's been continued through no matter what the system, no matter what the play caller. CJ 7-12 is going to be there. CJ to Nico Collins, they have enough of a mind meld to get that to happen. But what happens when you have defenses that inevitably throw a majority of their weight and shift their defenses towards Nico Collins? That's the benefit of having a wide receiver of that caliber. It's one of the reasons why Amon-Ra St. Brown gets a little dicey with me personally, and maybe I'm being disrespectful. It's possible. I recognize that. But I look at wide receivers and I rate the wide receivers the highest that force defenses to change the way that they play to gear up attention towards them. And Nico is absolutely in that. who are the people that you have that can step up in those spaces, particularly in the red zone? Is it Dalton Schultz, right? Is it Jaden Higgins?
Yeah.
Who, I mean, is it possibly someone like a Christian Kirk or, you know, I don't even know who you would then, Braxton Berrios, who we saw in the red zone situation that you got in the first preseason game. Is it, you know, are you utilizing speed?
And running.
And, or is it like the likes of Woody Marks or guys that, that out of the backfield? Yeah. Well, how do they get to various different ways of attacking in the red zone? I think that's a very fair point that I would love to get a feel for. That, as you mentioned, is probably more of another joint practice type situation.
Well, and let's think about it. If we're saying there's only going to be two or three more real opportunities, because let's be very clear about this. Going into the final preseason game, they're going to have probably 50, or if not more, of their entire 53 pretty much mind made up. So if you only have two or three, you know, more opportunities to prove these things, you know, we play the what if game on Wednesday. What if they don't? You know, what if it's there's still? That's why it's so important to see these things. The next step, the joint practice yesterday, widely was considered, you know, up and down. You had some good, you had some bad. You know, if we're still in that place, you know, even going into the third preseason game, but obviously, especially going into, you know, going into the opener against the Rams, we're gonna have some real reluctance about this offense.
I'm gonna be honest. I don't think
that you are anyway.
I don't think you're gonna get out of that space.
Yeah,
I think that there's going to because again,
I'll feel better though. The question is, what would make you feel better if these three things happen?
No, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you continue to see, well, one of the things that make me feel better is, hey, get Cam Robinson healthy, get Trent Brown healthy, and let's see what is this the permutation you're throwing out there because of injury, or is this a permutation you're throwing out there because you like how it stands? Like, I want them to have the full compliment because the whole idea of this training camp was this offensive line will be better, obviously because of fundamentals and scheme, but they'll be better because of competition. You lose ability to compete when dudes are sitting on the sideline. Right, we're not getting competition in that way because you're missing some of the guys at the top end of your offensive line. So, yeah, that's, I mean, outside of what you're talking about, and clearly we're trying to talk about what's happened on the field, but it can't be ignored. And I like Tay getting his reps on the left side, but I think that part of having that is having those guys involved in the entirety of the situation.
No, you're right. Is there anything else that would just make, because it's about the offense the rest of the way. I get safety is a question. We've talked about it. But
I still think corner depth is an interesting place that I want to watch.
But that's not with the ones necessarily. I mean, it might be tomorrow. But with the team that's going to trot out, you know, at SoFi, if you can run the ball and show something in the next two or three opportunities where you're going to have real, you know, real tackling, real hitting, et cetera. If you can maybe stretch the field a little bit and protect C.J. Stroud, we haven't seen it. We haven't seen a drop back pass, and there's that pocket, and he pats the ball. And he goes to his second look or his third look. You know, we haven't seen very much of it.
That's where it's tough that, unfortunately, we weren't able to actually be out there physically and see joint practice. But from all accounts, obviously, Seth.
Well, even the touchdown to Nico was boom, boom, boom. There he comes across the field. Got him.
Well, there's been some instances, and I mean, you even get the benefit of seeing this somewhat through videos the Texans put up. There's been instances and opportunities where the line is held up. I want to give them that credit because in order for it to be up and down, we can't simply talk about
it. But I'm talking about when he's coming off a receiver and then looking at the next one.
Yeah, and
I'm talking about you need three full, if not 4 seconds.
Yeah, and to be fair, there were a number of kind of coverage type sacks or would-be sacks at joint practice.
Yeah.
That was more about the secondary for the Panthers than it was about their front line. Now, the front line isn't incredible. You always talk about Derrick Brown in the middle, obviously making havoc, but they held up decently in those situations passing wise. But is that going to be a consistent? Is that going to happen, as you mentioned, on clear pin your ears back downs? I think that there's obviously more stress testing that can be done for a level of confidence going into week one. But I do want to give them their props. They have lived up to kind of what the game plan has been for the Texans. I've always questioned how far that game plan takes you when it comes to what you want in the offensive line.
Absolutely.
And we'll see as they continue to do that. From the text line from the 832. There we go. How open are they with players who are on the bubble? Lopez, you want to answer this?
How open are they?
The Texans.
Like, what do you mean open?
How open, how much are they willing to give you on players who are on the bubble? If you're talking about explicitly telling you words, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, they've done some things that have given us some idea. Wide receiver room is one of those places that we've been
Xavier
really
Hutchinson.
Interested in. Xavier Hutchinson. I know that earlier this morning, Sean Pendergast he said that with his whole chest that Hutchinson is a lock, and I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. I like giving myself a little wiggle room, but I 90-95% chance that he's there. I mean, he's gotten run with the ones in a way that feels significant to where I'm looking at, is he going to have the opportunity to be a quote-unquote starter at times? So it does feel like you're getting some of those, so you're paring down what's happening that way. And I imagine if we start talking about just off the top of the dome, and I know that you have that roster in front of you, who's on the bubble in your mind? Because I know that obviously Mechie is on the bubble. I imagine Watson's probably on the bubble, and maybe Braxton Berrios on the bubble wide receiver.
I think Berrios is making the squad.
Okay.
Yeah. But technically, I guess, you know, you would have to classify that because Mechie's been playing better. Obviously, Watson is in the mix. I would say Watson at this point.
You think he's odd man out?
Mm-hmm.
Or just like generally on the bubble?
Well, Watson and Mechie, it's between those two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other offensive ones that you go, all right, because wide receivers, I mean, Lyman, it's kind of been.
Oh, about Blake Fisher.
Well, yeah, he's clearly although it does feel, do you feel confident that they'd be willing to pull the trigger on getting rid of him for this
season?
Well,
as Sean would say, it'd probably be a trade, you know, but on the bubble for this squad.
I don't see it, man, because this is his second year, too.
Second round pick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I just think being a GM, I don't think you could part ways with somebody that early.
Have a lot of pride in a GM.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
They don't want to look bad.
Off the strength of that, I don't see them cutting.
I think he's on the bubble. I absolutely do.
I think he's a little more disappointing this year, but I don't know if he's on the bubble.
Yeah, we'll get some more telling data points. And again, that's one of the things that gets more telling if you have your guys healthy. If Trent Brown is available, if Cam Robinson is available, we get a little bit better idea.
That's a big factor.
Of how they feel about Blake. Defensively, I think it feels pretty cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you mentioned Jake Hansen. I imagine he's in that space where you talk
Hansen's
about.
Hansen's the best one right now.
Nick Neiman is in that same look. And then I'm intrigued as to how the cornerbacks fall between Tremont Smith. Well, Damon Arnette feels like he is the last in that group to me right now. And we'll continue to watch that. And D'Angelo Ross, those guys. But yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Excited for a noon kickoff there at NRG Stadium versus the Panthers tomorrow. I'll be out there bright and early because it's tailgate time, baby. It is that time. All right, coming up next, let's get into our lunchtime confessions. And I'm going to be honest, I'm already getting into the college football vibes. It's a little tease for me. We'll do that next.
All right, kind of hurts me to say this, but it's got to happen. Somebody's got to say it.
Do they?
Yeah, they do.
I don't know if this is something that absolutely needs to be said here.
For the greater good.
I don't even know what you're trying to say, to be honest.
The NBA should probably go ahead and just raise the white flag on Christmas Day. It ain't gonna happen.
Ugh.
It ain't gonna happen. Mm. You know, the NBA released its schedule yesterday. Fantastic Christmas Day games.
Well, remember they talked about the Christmas. They released Christmas Day. Was that last week?
No, I know, but the whole schedule was released, and so now with the NFL games, etc. I'm gonna give you some NBA games on Christmas Day. Cavaliers at Knicks, Spurs at Thunder, Mavericks at Warriors, Rockets at Lakers, Timberwolves at Nuggets. Damn good slate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Damn good slate.
Mm-hmm.
One problem. They go against Cowboys at Commanders, Lions at Vikings, Broncos at Chiefs.
All divisional games, too.
And it's the NFL. Like,
that night game is a monster, too. Dude, Broncos, Chiefs.
Look, they don't want to admit it. I get it, you know, et cetera. Raise the white flag. You don't own Christmas Day anymore. It's over.
Yeah, they are bullies. Over. The NFL is bullies. Yeah. And they're not wrong. I think it was Roger Goodell was saying that they don't view themselves as a competitor to sports leagues now. They're trying to view themselves as competitors to, like, Apple and Google.
I mean, and it's sad, kind of, because we used to all kind of start watching the league at large on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
There's always great game. The NFL is going to wipe the floor with these games.
I do find it funny, though, that, and I know this is not everybody, so I don't want to paint it with a broad brush, but, like, people want to try and neg the NBA by being like, oh, well, the NFL laughs at you. The NFL laughs at everything else. Like,
they do.
It's kind of tried to transcend the space of, like, being a sport versus, like, again, trying to be this entity that's much larger.
Yeah. I don't run rap no more. I run the map.
Yeah.
Type deal.
That is absolutely it.
Regardless of who they compete against or what they do, they're going to wipe the floor with the NBA. And it's kind of sad because these are great games. You just got to raise the white
really
flag
good games
and go somewhere else.
The problem is, like, what happens when they come there too? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that that's not the way that you're,
yeah,
you're
but
not
Christmas
wrong.
Is special and different.
No,
and,
sure. Yeah. But my point, my larger point being, all right, we'll vacate this block because the NFL said they want it. What happens when the NFL comes for the next block? You know what I mean? Like, at what point,
what is that block? Is it like a Tuesday on, in you know, I don't know. But Christmas Day is a mark in time. It's sure. A big event.
Sure.
Just sometimes you just got to take the L and move on.
Yeah, but I feel like you got to fight for that one because that one was not just yours. That was yours in a very special way. I'm not saying that you're going to win, but yeah. To quote another, we're quoting various media. I will again quote The Wire as I love to. If it's a lie, then we fight on that lie, but we got to fight. Like that's, I feel like in this, Christmas has got to be
that's
one of those. That's
a losing proposition.
Fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been such a tradition for the NBA for so long. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of crazy for them to just be like, all right. You can have it. It's just, you just got to put the best slate out there.
I don't know if it'd be crazy. It'd be painful, and you'd admit, like, okay, they just own us, you know. Yeah, I don't think it'd be crazy.
Yeah, I think the NBA just got to put the best slate of basketball out there, man, and just let the people decide.
Well, they will.
Hope that you have enough basketball fans who are willing to watch that, or hope that the games just happen to stink for the Texans or Cowboys. Cowboys. That's what I wanted to say. There we go. Hope the games seem to stink for the Cowboys and the Vikings, and then you're just gonna have to live with that. That last game is gonna be a banger. I there's no way around that one.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah,
it's over.
I gotta admit, I am even more steadfast in my belief that the Bill Belichick experiment at North Carolina will not work.
Did you hear the mic up? What you're talking about?
No, actually, I'm talking about something else. What would you say?
It was a mic'd up thing. He's at practice, and I was like, "This is not going to work either." Right? It's funny.
Well, it does tie in with that because Chris Vanini of The Athletic, who covers college football very well, reported that Bill Belichick won't headline North Carolina's weekly coaches radio show. He'll do the very first one, but what was previously called Mac Brown Live, obviously Mac Brown was the last guy who held this position as the head coach in North Carolina, will now be called Carolina Football Live, and it'll be mostly the general manager, Michael Lombardi, who will be the show's headliner every week. And the reason why I lean into the idea that I don't think that this is going to work. I understand that the college football landscape is changing and you're having more of these kind of front offices built to help manage the player acquisition and the money aspect. There's a lot more that goes into being running a program. But you still got to have the head man be the face of this.
Yes.
And the idea, I mean, I don't think college football is going to change so much that it becomes something that is something entirely different than what it is, which is the man at the top is still the man at the top, and he is the face of this.
Yeah.
And having your guy in Bill Belichick kind of not want to be that college football, especially in the South, as North Carolina barely is, you need that coach. You need that accessibility. You need that kind of thing, that man that people are believing in some way. And it feels like he's absconding with this, and like the entirety of North Carolina is just saying, we are not going to lean into what college football is. And I just don't think the college football is a place where that works.
It isn't. The coach is this, obviously, the face of the program, but oftentimes the governor of the state, and for him to not do that is interesting. I thought it was going to be his son, but Lombardi has broadcasting experience and all that. So,
I mean, he does, and I don't think that that's inherently like a bad thing that he's coming with that.
But it is a sign.
But people want to hear from coach.
Yeah,
people want to hear from the coach. Like that is the guy who you're putting your belief in that guy, even if he's going to build a staff in any other place. It's still kind of all on his name. It's all on his credit, and he's not continuing to build that with the fan base.
No, I agree. I agree.
I find that to be deeply odd and upsetting, and maybe I'm just being too nostalgic, but it just doesn't feel like it's going to work at all.
I got to confess, I felt so bad for this driver yesterday. So I was leaving the parking lot yesterday, and it was a driver kind of at the edge of the street trying to bust a right.
Mm-hmm.
And she was clearly taking her time and taking a long time, to the point the car directly behind her started honking like crazy. Beep!
Yeah.
And then just hurry up and zoomed around the car to make a right before her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what is this car doing? I'm like, why is he? So the car that was trying to turn plastered all over the car, student driver. I felt so bad for that student draft. I'm like, man, why are you being a jerk blowing the horn like that? It was clear as day that it was a student driver in that car. And so I pulled a jerk. Yeah, I'm like, come on, man. I understand everybody got a little road rage in them.
That poor student driver's terrified.
She was terrified. I pulled up next to her. We met up at the same light. Yeah. She was had the tunnel vision.
10 and 2.
Man, she looked so nervous, man. I wanted her to peek over towards me so I could
give her a thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm like, it's all right. Don't let that jerk. If I wanted to roll down the window, be like, don't pay attention. Nobody else. You focus on the road.
That's a special kind of jerk.
Yeah,
that
man.
Is a special like, kind you, of jerk.
Like it's one thing if somebody was on their phone and wasn't paying attention. Go ahead.
Well, sure, we all do that.
but damn, this was a student. It said it all over the car. It was clear as day as a student driver. I'm like, why are you being such a jackass over this, man?
I mean, it's funny, but it's sad. You know, it's one of those. You know, like, come on, man, don't do that.
Yeah, I felt so bad for that student driver.
And imagine like if it was like her first time behind the wheel. You know, with the instructor. Or whatever.
I ain't gonna lie, it had to be her first time because you could tell she was going like 20 miles an hour and she was kind of swerving a little bit, but when I pulled up she was just serious face, wasn't looking left
white
or right
in the wheel.
Yes, I'm just like, man, I felt so bad for her. Man,
that's awful.
I will say though, that feels like one of those you got dropped into the deep end. I hope that ends up being beneficial for her, right? Because I feel like that can go one of two ways. She just learns that, oh, man, this is the deep end and I got to catch up. Mm-hmm. Or she's traumatized forever and that she ends up being one of those people that's like, I would rather not drive. Yeah. Drive, please. I'd appreciate
it. Yeah, she
that.
Might be scarred.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of my first time with my student. I had a student drive. I went to driving school and they had to do the hours, the courses of driving with a driver. And man, this lady, I forgot her name. I wish I could remember her name, but she older lady.
Yeah.
She had me all over the place. She was going over her girlfriend's house to pick up some stuff.
Yeah.
I was all in the hood. She was just like, oh yeah. She was all on the phone.
Picking up her laundry. I mean, her dry cleaning.
Yes, make her left right here.
Yeah.
Pull up to this house right here.
I need a hamburger.
Yeah. Hey girl, like, yeah, I'm doing a little student driving for him. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
From the 832, they said they own a driving school, and it's absolutely a thing. What?
That sucks.
People are jerks to student drivers, man, all the time. Why?
I always let it go. Yes. Every time I see it, man, I'm like, you know what? I don't care how crazy they drive. I'm not. I'm going to be cool.
Yeah, you have to. We've all been there, too, of course.
Yeah, I can't do that, man. Yeah.
See, I have a certain feeling like this. They said their first time with a student instructor, or driving instructor, rather, was getting on 225 and going to the Ship Channel Bridge during 5 p.m.
Ooh,
traffic.
Oh, man.
Gosh, that's a tough one.
That got to be tough learning how to drive in Houston, too. Oh. Your very first time.
High that Ship Channel Bridge.
Yeah.
But if you can drive here,
yes,
you can make it anywhere.
You'll be all right. You'll be good. Nothing else will faze you.
New York might get you a little bit, too, because just how crowded it is and confusing. But, if you could drive here, you can make it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said he wasn't being a jerk. He was teaching her a life lesson.
Oh, God.
Nah.
Man, he had to let that go, man.
Let it go.
Yeah, once you get on the street, then zoom on past. Mm-hmm. But, you don't blow the horn like a crazy man.
When was the last time you used your horn?
Oh, I use it all the time.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're that guy?
No, not like totally to be a jerk, but like mostly at stoplights. You know, because they're texting it. You know, I do. Beep, beep. How you use your horn is very key.
Why don't we have two horns? We should have like the I'm trying to let you know some horn, and then just like, hey,
alert
hey.
Type of horn.
And I always feel bad when I try to just do the little tap, and it's longer than it. Like I'm being a jerk. I'm like, well, sorry, I was really just trying to get you.
No, have you ever hit the horn by mistake?
Yeah.
You wasn't even trying to hit the horn, and you just beep.
Oh, my bad.
You were like, oh, I'm so sorry. I ain't want no smoke with you. We good. Yeah. You ain't do nothing wrong.
All right, those are your lunchtime confessions here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we got the schedule release, as Lopez was mentioning. Let's get to some of the big takeaways for the Rockets, and also a piece of audio that has given me that's kind of reaffirmed some excitement that I have about this Rockets team this year. Let's talk about that next. All right. You're in the Loop here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Friday to you. Hope it is going very well. Texans had a walkthrough today, but no media availability. So something light before they get ready, or before they get out there, rather, at NRG Stadium tomorrow at noon to take on the Carolina Panthers. And it is funny because I guess not thinking about the fact that there was no availability today, nobody really asked, hey, D'Amico, what you doing with the starters? So this will kind of be one of those things that we get a little bit of a surprise
it
on.
Is. Yeah, you're right.
So you definitely want to keep it locked to the pregame show starting at 9, I believe, right? 9 a.m.?
Yep.
When you have an opportunity to hear Sean and Seth get you going. And I imagine as soon as they know, they will let you know if those starters are active and ready to go, or if maybe those starters aren't. And then you go, all right, we know what time it is. But, yeah, that'll be important to get a feel for in this game, whereas we're still trying to figure out, as we mentioned, a number of things, including what does this offensive line look like and how confident are you heading into the season? Speaking of heading into a season, we are a couple of months away, and maybe a little less than a couple of months away from the Rockets getting their season going. Or no, a couple months away, because October 21st is the first game of the season for them. And the reason why I know that is schedule released yesterday. And so there were some notable things that jump out. We talked a little bit about the fact, obviously, opening night, Kevin Durant gets to be on a floor that he's very familiar with there in Oklahoma City. See the Thunder raise their banner. That's going to be the NBA on NBC. We'll see that. But some other notable games. What were some of the ones that jumped out to you? Because I made note of a few of them that really caught my attention, including the first revenge game that the Rockets get, which is about a month away from their home opener, or a month after their home opener. It is November 24th in Phoenix, where the Phoenix Suns. Now, I don't think the Phoenix Suns will be all that good, but it'll be a fun note to be able to see. Hey,
yeah,
look, it's Jalen, it's Dylan. What's happening with y'all?
I was yes, you're right, but I was actually looking at the schedule, you know, just in terms of how the flow is. You mentioned earlier, you know, how it might benefit them one way or another. Some of the tougher stretches, easier stretches, that kind of thing. Obviously, you know, you mentioned the NBA on NBC. Let's keep in mind, that's our first theme game. That's the old NBA on NBC theme we're going to hear.
And
it's going to be Rockets and Thunder. That's kind of cool right there.
Very soon thereafter, you also get Amazon Prime games. So you're getting a feel for all of the new ones. November 7th, you'll be on the road at San Antonio, which that'll be
fun.
The game itself will be really interesting, seeing how that young team has come together with Victor Wembanyama. But then you'll get another feel of the new part TV partners of the NBA watching your team, not just watching some other teams in the NBA.
Yeah, so that kind of stood out, especially the NBA on NBC. But I mentioned this earlier. I think it's going to be, you know, pretty key. Get off to a good start. The Thunder game to start, but then relatively workable, easy-ish schedule.
Like five straight games that I could say are winnable between Pistons, Nets, both of those at home, then Raptors and Celtics on the road, and then you get Dallas again, which, hey.
And then the other stretch for me, well, first of all, and this has been pointed out by a number of people, you know, just 14 back-to-backs. The fewer back-to-backs is always the better, but especially when you have, you know, a Kevin Durant, and you're trying to, you know, he's not going to play 82 games, but, you know, maybe he'll be able to sustain things a little better with fewer back-to-backs. I wouldn't expect him to play a whole lot of back-to-backs, but some, of course. And then the other thing is, around holiday time is when their tougher stretches. I think from Thanksgiving until Christmas, they really only have like three home games, something like that.
No, that's, I would say two home games, because you have starting on November 24th, you have a four-game road trip. You come home for two more games, and then you have, obviously, minus the NBA Cup, which obviously will break this up a little bit, and you still have to figure out what those games are. You have a Dallas game, a New Orleans game, a Denver game, a Sacramento game, and two LA games, all on the road, including the Lakers game on Christmas.
Right.
So that's a really tough stretch in December.
And that's what I was looking at.
No, for sure.
You know, that's what they were looking at.
And you mentioned, or I said Denver in there. You get Denver a few times early on in the season. You get Oklahoma City early on in the season. You get Golden State, who I don't know what to believe in just yet, early on in the season. You get a few challenges pretty early on before you even get to Christmas. Now, of course, there's some fill in there, but I looked at that and I was like, okay, that's really interesting that you got a feel for what this team is by the time you get to the unofficial start of the season at Christmas.
You do. So that's what I would say. That would be my big takeaway on the schedule. The NBA takeaway would be all these national games. You mentioned some of the new, you know, outlets and such. There's going to be a big NBA presence. I also mentioned during Confessions, you know, Christmas Day, I feel like it's kind of a waste of some fantastic games. But in terms of the Rockets particularly, end of the beginning of the season, and maybe more importantly, based on what we think, the end of the season, they might be able to have a nice little, you know, closing stretch.
There's a lot of there's a lot of good home stretches as well, where you got at least you have a nice good home stand of being home for probably a solid week or two, where you're facing off against the Lakers a couple of times, the Pelicans, the Hawks in Miami at home in March. So that'll be nice to kind of give yourself an opportunity to have a couple of runs, and you actually finish the season with a few games at home as well.
Right. Like so if you're in any sort of race, you know, to the top of the conference or anything,
yeah,
it suits you better.
Yeah, no. So look, there's a lot of fun within this. Of course, you get a better idea of what all this means as you get to the season. But I was very, very intrigued by some of the things that happened early on. I liked the way that the schedule kind of falls together and excited for this to come around. But one of the main excitements that clearly we all have is Kevin Durant joining this team. We mentioned earlier that he's already ingratiating himself to the local areas, obviously of Central Texas, where he played college ball, but Houston teaming up with Trill Burger to have the Easy Money Burger to for the next week. All purchases go towards relief for the flooding in Central Texas. But I'm even more excited after hearing this piece of audio that came out. And I of course, as soon as I'm going to go to, I forget the podcast, but it is Quinn Cook talking on this podcast. Quinn Cook, you'll remember, kind of just a NBA kind of vet guy, played with the Golden State Warriors in that time period when the Warriors won a couple of championships. And obviously one of those was at the expense, at least on the pathway there, of the Rockets. But this was Quinn Cook talking about Kevin Durant and that experience, especially as it related to Steph Curry. Listen to this.
Kevin wanted Steph to get that finals MVP.
Everything he could to get it to him. Yes, he did.
That's all he was talking about all season. Like, I can't wait till Steph gets his finals MVP so he can shut up everybody, the naysayers, blah, blah, blah. But I think game two, that's when Steph broke the record. I think he
game two, he had 9 threes, yep. Mm-hmm.
And game three, we were struggling. Steph was struggling. And Kevin just like accidentally just walked into 40, whatever. And then you just look at the numbers statistically. I think Kevin had a triple double to game four to seven. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even as aggressive. Like, that's how good he is. Like, he even wasn't as aggressive. And he just accidentally got the finals MVP back to back.
I love this. And I wonder if you can tell the things that draw me in here. First and foremost, in the midst of all of the, you know, obviously Kevin Durant, you went and formed a super team or whatever, you went chasing a ring. In the midst of all of that, I've always said that he was the best player at that time, as evidenced by him winning those finals MVPs. All during that time, he's thinking about his teammates and trying to get them into that place. So for anyone who has had some level of, oh, well, he's a team, he's a cancer, or he's, you know, not been a winner type mentality, I hope that that gives you a little bit of pause in seeing that one of his teammates is looking at this and saying that he is actively trying to help someone else get to that accolade. And I think that that could easily and very much should be his role on this team in some ways, is helping bring out the best of some of the guys he's playing with, particularly an Alperen Şengün, an Amen Thompson, a Jabari Smith Jr. Right. I think that that is going to be one of the good things. How can you help some of these other guys step into a larger portion of himself? But also, I love the idea of, as he's doing that, when it's needed, and not even as he's trying, here comes a 40 ball for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that, well, those are two different things that you can talk about with Kevin Durant. The first one, I think it's a little different here with the Steph thing. You know, Kevin Durant is always angry at outside narratives. You know, you can look at his Twitter account and know that.
Sure.
You know, he is a you don't know what's going on in the locker room guy. And he's not wrong. I think that was a big factor there with, we got to get Steph this thing and show everybody, you know, whatever. I think here it's different. I think here he's just going to put on a different hat and maybe be more of the sage, you know, veteran leader. Not like, I want to show them. It's more like, I want to help you. You know, I can help you. So it's a kind of a different way that he's going to be that guy here, I think.
It might be different, but I think it comes from the same place.
Sure.
Just the idea that, hey, that has existed in there for anyone that had any doubts. But I do love the idea of the 40 ball. And the reason why I bring that up is I saw a stat that I think for the last few years, number of years, I mean, a handful of years, Kevin Durant has not led a team in field goals attempted while also clearly being a scoring menace on all these teams. And that, again, points to the idea of just how good of a fit this particular star player added to this team is, because there's still offensive development that needs to happen for all the guys we talked about, Amen Thompson, Alperen Sengun, Jabari Smith Jr. And you hear it there, like, Kevin Durant was not quite trying to make himself smaller and get out of the way, but he is very cognizant of making sure there's room for everyone else. And I think that was one of the questions, one of the things that I think a lot of us have said, hey, get Kevin Durant, but don't lean your entire offense on it. Now, that's still Ime and his coaching staff that needs to, you know, lean into making sure that's the case. But he very much has the capability of, I'm not taking the most shots, but I will be, my presence will be felt in the scoring, which feels like the best of both worlds and what the Rockets need specifically.
Yeah, but there are going to be times when, please take all the shots, Kevin. Yo, Kevin, please take all the shots. That's the whole reason he's here. The whole reason he's here is you want to be able to say, go score.
No, 100%. No, score. you want to be able to do that, but I don't want that to be...
No, I get it. Grand picture, et cetera,
And again, in the smaller case of, and it's not smaller because it's a bigger stage, but like smaller in guys, I guess, like scale to some degree, is he can try and push himself to the back in order to make sure that somebody else shines, which I think is going to be something that's beneficial. And he also, again, is super efficient. It's something we knew, but that should help hopefully grow the offense for this Rockets team this year, as they've got a lot of opportunities because there's a lot of good games and then a lot of nationally televised games as well. Starting off with the first NBA on NBC game since 2002.
It's awesome.
There in Oklahoma City versus the versus the reigning champion. So it's fun. I'm excited, but we got a couple of months till we get there, because, and the Texans will get us there starting tomorrow. Noon game, preseason wise, versus the Carolina Panthers. Excited for that. In fact, speaking of that, let's kind of talk a little bit about that and the remainder of the preseason. Preseason week two getting jumped off. What are we looking forward to all the way across, including what sleepers could possibly pop up for your Texans in this game? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about it next.